Blue 80, set up. And I snap the ball, and there's just this horrific splash.
It's time to join the stink tank.
You're right, Jets fans. That's the one right there in the middle.
And I'm like, I'm just going to go. And I completely emptied my bladder on the bench.
I like to call myself a Jason Bourne of pooping.
Mark Schlereth.
This stinks.
Every Tuesday with Wyman and Bob.
It is time, everybody. We look forward to this every single week. And boy, do we have things to discuss with this man. He's probably tired of talking about what happened. What in the heck happened out there in Denver?
Oh, he's not tired of it.
He's with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. He is Mark Schlereth. Mark, you've had a couple of days to digest something that hasn't happened since 1966, and that's a defense giving up 70. How do you give up 70? How's that possible in this day and age?
Well, that's a great question. Hey, that's a great question. I mean, that's but when you put on the film, I tell you, I watched the film, the defensive film, early this morning before I went into radio, and it looked like the Louisiana Mud Dogs before Bobby Boucher arrived. I mean, they it was legitimately the worst film I have ever seen in my entire life. They probably, just on that tape alone, sent 8 defensive players to the Pro Bowl. And maybe eight offensive players to the Pro Bowl from Miami. And a couple go straight to the Hall of Fame after what I witnessed. I mean, first and foremost, people talk about, well, 24 missed tackles. Well, I don't care who you are. You could be Stretch Armstrong. When all the defensive linemen are getting just ass over tea kettle blocked and pounded into the ground, and there's an 8-yard gaping hole that a linebacker is supposed to tackle an NFL running back, give me a break. Like, I don't care who you are. You ain't making that tackle. And it was one after the next after the next. The other thing for me was Vance Joseph, whoever he is. He was the head coach.
Joseph.
How did he become the D coordinator again? Vance Joseph played in the or coached in the NFC West. You can tell I'm flustered. He coached in the NFC West against the Rams, who base out of a wide zone kind of, you know, offense. That's kind of where they hang their hat. San Francisco, same thing. Now they're more multiple, but that's kind of what their identity or their base is. And same with Seattle. So you've coached against it forever. How you think having your defensive linemen try to penetrate and swim and get knocked 4 yards out of their gap assignment, how that's going to work. And then, you know, I mean, I would think, now this is just me, if I'm an edge player and, you know, I'm getting short motion from a wide receiver and he is absolutely pinning my ass inside and you're running pin-pull game all game long and you are gashing them on the edge, I would think, I'm tired of getting ear-holed by a wide receiver, and I'm going to peek out there, and anytime that guy goes in short motion, I'm going to turn my hips and try to put my helmet right in his jaw and see if I can break the damn thing. But no, instead, we just keep getting pinned on the edge on every single pin-and-pull play, and they're just pitching it out there and running like, you know, poop through a goose. Yeah, and just, I mean, you can tell by the way you game plan somebody how you feel about that particular team. Miami had zero fears. We can do whatever we want, whenever we want. You have no players on your defense that threaten us. And they ran it down the middle, down the gut, on the outside. They threw it over the top. They threw it underneath. They did anything they wanted, and there was zero. Hey, we want to get 5 guys out every time? We can do that because nobody on your team threatens us. It's the most embarrassing loss. It's the worst performance by a defense in 60 years, bar none. And nobody got fired. Right? But that's the other thing. Nobody, like, hey, man, if I went into a game and gave up 7 sacks in a game, my ass gets fired. Like, I get benched or I get cut. And I've never called for anybody to get fired. The fact that Vance Joseph still has a job, that you gave up 70, I'm perplexed. It blows me away.
Well, Mark, was there any, like, what we like to call it here, the soft J yogging? Was there yogging or loafing, or was there guys that, you know, just bad body language, don't care. Because, first of all, if I'm a coach and, you know, they get to, say, 50 points or whatever, I'm putting the backups in. So let's get somebody out there who can do it. But did you see that it was, I mean, were they being physically dominated, or was it just laziness and just, you know, like they didn't care?
Right. No, they like, that's what I thought when I initially watched it on television. Like, I'll tell you guys kind of a funny story. So I get delayed. I'm in Detroit. I did Atlanta, Detroit. And so I get delayed, you know, and they, you know, the airline essentially holds us hostage on the plane, because they can hold you hostage for like 2 hours before they have to let you off, right? So they're trying to fix this plane. And it just keeps popping up. I don't know what, like, the computer said, but one minute was this, and the next minute was hydraulics, and then, you know, tires. And then, I don't know what the, like, it just kept going on and on and on. So I decided, hey, listen, I'm going to just watch this Broncos game, right? And so I put on my iPad, and I put my headphones on, you know, and I'm just watching this, and I'm not paying attention. And I just get lost and immersed in how god-awful this film is. And at one point, I'm sitting on the plane, and I'm going, and I just blurt out loud, "You got to be blanking kidding me!" Like, "I've been kidding me!" Like, I shouted out, like, and I'm like, "Oh!" I look, and nobody even flinched, because everybody was so pissed off about not being held hostage on the plane that they thought that's what they thought I was talking about. But I was talking about Broncos film. You know, lack of awareness, Dave. Go back. I think it's the third quarter. And they're down 35 to 13 or 42 to whatever it is. I mean, it's some just awful score. Maybe it's the very end of the first half. And they run a, you know, they run a speed out, I don't know, about an 8 yard out. And it's the first incompletion of the game. So Tua starts 16 of 16. It's the first incompletion of the game. And it's a bad throw. And the receiver has to go down to the dirt to try to grab it. And it's incomplete, and Damari Mathis waves his finger. He's not even close to covering it. Like, not in my house? Wait a minute, you've given up 40 points, not in my house? You don't live in your house. You live in a tent at the end of the driveway. Like you are getting thunder punched. Dude, there was offensive linemen, after they scored touchdowns on long runs, doing somersaults into the end zone. How easy is the game for you if you're fat, you play offensive line, you're a non-athlete, and you've got the energy to do a somersault in the end zone because the game's so easy? It is the worst film I have ever seen in my entire life, bar none.
All right, we can only give you 10 minutes on the Denver defense, Mark. I know you've probably done hours, right? I mean, those fans are demanding.
Well, I have done hours. I mean, you know, what makes you laugh will make you cry. I mean, it's pathetic.
Well, what the number that stuck out to me outside of the score, Mark, is and Dave always talks about how, you know, as a defender, how demoralizing it is when a team just runs the ball on you. It's just, you know, it's just kind of a gut punch one after another. And they ran for 350 yards and 5 touchdowns. I'm thinking, I guess if you got a receiver that's burning a corner who's having a brutal day and you're taking advantage of a zone defense, whatever's going on with the passing game, but to rush for 350 yards and 5 touchdowns, I don't think I've ever seen that.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a dominant performance that their rookie running back, Devon Achane, changed his name to Devon Achane. It's like Devon Achane. It's like Chaka Khan. Devon Achane. Devon Achane. Come on, everybody. Everybody about it. You know, I mean, I'm just like, I am so good. I am no longer going to go by my birth name. I have changed my name to Devon Achane. Let me decree, it is said, it is going to happen. You know, I mean, I don't even know what to tell you guys. It's just like, I'm glad that I'm getting to vent all this all over again, because, like I said, the fact that people still have retained jobs, I don't know. Like, you give up 350 yards. You gave up 726 yards. You gave up 376 passing and 350 rushing. And they could have had 900 yards total offense, and they could have scored 100.
Wow. Well, and what do you have this week, Mark? I see, by the way, the Broncos 0-3, the Bears 0-3.
Yeah.
Oh,
No, they don't. They could play to a 0-0 tie. Yeah, they could play to a 0-0 tie.
What? So who do you have this weekend? What are you? You were in Detroit last week, right?
Yeah, I was in Detroit last week. I had Atlanta and Detroit, and enjoyed the heck out of that game. Detroit's a really good team. And then let me see. I've got this weekend. I've got Cincinnati traveling to Tennessee.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's exciting.
Speaking of the Bears, where are you at with their quarterback situation? In you know, we always talk about Ohio State, and is anybody ever going to come out of there and do anything? And everybody thought, well, Justin Fields is the guy, and so far he's not the guy, and this year has not been good so far for him. Is that more about what he's surrounded with? Is it him? Have you had a chance to watch him enough to gain a real strong opinion on whether he can be the guy or not?
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. I did probably 3 Chicago games last year. And I have seen him grow as an NFL quarterback. And he's an exceptional athlete. I think one of the issues that I think you have when you're an exceptional athlete that gets made into a quarterback is that your default mechanism isn't from the neck up. It's not about making a wise decision or throwing the ball away and having another down. Your decision-making process becomes, I'm a better athlete than everybody else, so let me go make a play with my body. So your default mechanism becomes, let me run around and make something happen. Let me just go out-athlete people. And that's not how you win in this league long-term as a quarterback. And I think the other thing that happens to you is you understand the sustainability of a guy who runs around and is that mobile is it's not a long-term solution. That guy is going to – it's not a matter – like, we all get hurt to play this game, but that's just – it's going to happen, and it's going to happen sooner than later. And so now you try to take this guy who's an exceptional athlete and try to morph him into more of a pocket guy, and that's not what he is at this point in his career. Maybe he will become that, but that's not what he is now. And so you've got to just kind of roll the dice and say, man, like Lamar, they're trying to do that with Lamar Jackson. Remember, like Lamar for 7 or 8 years was not that guy. That's not who he is. And so I think that's a tough transition, especially for guys that are exceptional athletes. So, you know, I think that's something they tried to do and it hasn't really worked. And you've heard him complain about it, even though he backtracked. But like, I think that's a tough thing. You know, here's why I suck at golf. Like, I can get a birdie. I can pipe a drive and then I can hit a second shot to 4 feet and tap in a birdie putt and feel pretty good. That's not what makes me suck at golf. What makes me suck at golf is the quads and the triples I have on a consistent basis. That's why I suck, because I can't do it consistently. And what you see with him is you see a couple throws that wow you. They're like, you know, 320-yard drives right down the pipe, and you're like, oh, my God, he figured it out. And then you see dreck after that. And so the lack of consistency is the issue. So you've got to rely on athleticism. You got to get that guy out of the pocket. You got to let him run with the ball. You got to let him play the RPO game. That's the only way you're going to win.
Hey, Mark, so you were here for the Green Bay game, and your expertise is offensive line. We just talked to Anthony Bradford, who is a rookie at LSU. They drafted in the later rounds, and he played the entire game, and really only 2 starters were out there. And then even Damian Lewis got banged up a little bit. So we had, at one point, 4 offensive linemen that were not the starters out there on the field. And the Seahawks did a pretty good job running the ball, especially in the second half, and came around. And I know you were out here looking at the O-line and the coaching, and they were running some fairly complex alignments and things like that and plays. And I felt like it was just a testament to how well coached this offensive line is right now. And I'm wondering if that stood out to you when you were here.
Yeah, it stood out to me also as I was prepping to do the Detroit game. And what you guys were able to do, you gave up 1 sack late in that game off of, you know, frankly, a garbage sack where Geno should have thrown it away, but he just kept scrambling around, put himself in harm's way on about the 1 or 2 yard line. So, I mean, it was a bad decision by Geno, no question about it. But the bottom line is he started 2, you know, backup offensive tackles. And
I think there's a couple things that that resonate with me when I watched that film was how quickly Geno and this offense got rid of the football. So that's an offensive coordinator who understands what my issues are, what my issues are up front. And so let me devise a game plan that this ball is going to get out of the quarterback's hand quickly so these guys don't have to bleed. So they don't have to, you know, do those things. And obviously you've got to, if you can run the ball with any consistency, which they didn't do a great job against Detroit, but you still had attempts. And sometimes, you know, sometimes with bad coordinators or bad play callers, they forget that the attempts are important. Because attempts are like attempts, when you get rushing attempts, even if you're only getting 2 yards per carry, it makes the potential of play action a viable play for you. And so what it does is it gives me as an offensive lineman a tool in my tool belt to make sure that I can change sets and do those things. You know, when all you do is drop back and throw it, especially with young guys, because you can't run it or you're not getting yards per carry on attempts, that's like saying, hey, man, I want you to build me a deck, okay? And I'm gonna deliver all the lumber and everything that you need to build this deck, but you don't get any nails, you don't get a saw, you don't get a level, you don't get it, but you can have a hammer. But that's it. Now put this deck together. Well, you know what you're going to build? A really crappy deck that's not going to support anybody. So if you don't have that option, if you don't do those things, now all of a sudden, you know, it's a third down and, you know, four. Well, you're not worried about a potential run, or it's a second down and long, and I've got a situation where maybe I can attack you in pass pro, I can upkick you, make you think at least it could be a run, and you don't buy any of that stuff as a defense. You don't have to. And so, you know, it's about giving your offensive line some tools to have in their tool belt so they can actually have some success. And so I've got to give Shane Waldron a lot of credit for even when they weren't running with efficiency, they were still doing some things to take some pressure off their guys.
Hey, one other quarterback I got to ask you about before we let you go, and that is the lowest-ranked quarterback in the entire league, Zach Wilson, who, boy, got an earful from Joe Namath, or at least he heard about it anyway. Joe Namath saying, I'm sick of it, and it's disgusting, and he just went down. He took a sack, and nobody touched him, and he just sat down. I mean, he ripped him. You know, I don't know, maybe I was fooled by Hard Knocks and Aaron Rodgers pumping him up and, you know, hey, this kid really has something and he can be somebody. He gets the keys to the car and he's been brutal. I mean, what you see is who he is, or is this a guy who can have, he's got enough ability to have a resurgence at some point, or what's your take on Zach Wilson? Cause he's hearing it out in New York, to say the least.
Well, I think we've all seen, Dave and I have seen plenty of guys who have all kinds of talent. They can't play. You know, they can run fast. They can jump high. I mean, there's no question he's got great arm talent and athleticism. Talent is oftentimes wasted on talented people. And, you know, I mean, Zach Wilson he has all the talent in the world. At some point, you have to understand that doesn't make you a football player. And I say this all the time. Hey, football is easy for football players. It's almost impossible for athletes. There's a different deal when it comes to playing football. And that kid shows you who he is on a week-to-week basis. That guy he takes sacks. He takes a 2-yard loss and turns it into a 12-yard loss on a consistent basis. You can't win offensively like that. You can't do that with the lack of awareness that dude has. And I tell you what, if I was a player in that locker room and he showed up with that Mr. Miyagi-san headband on, I'd smack it off the top of his head. I said, grow up, you little turd. I'll tell you the other thing. Even Stifler's mom's going to dump him. Like, no cougar is going to want to hang with that dude if he can't start winning some games. Just let you know.
All right.
That's your thing. Hey, it's not my thing. It's his thing.
I hadn't heard that. I didn't know that was his thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you didn't know that?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, giddy up.
Yeah, there was a story that we don't want Mark to go into anymore. I think your time is up, my friend.
I love he brings up Stifler's mom.
You know what happened to me this morning? I was so tired. This is no lie, Dave. I'm so tired. because I traveled in, I got in late, I got no sleep, and I passed out watching the Monday night game, and I must have forgotten to set my alarm, because all of a sudden, my wife tapped me on the shoulder. And the first thing I thought was, she's only human. You're going to be late for work.
Oh, God. On that note, Mark, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. Let's do this again next week, shall we?
Sure, I would, mate.
Thanks, Mark.
All right. Thanks, buddy. I did not know where he was going.
Yeah,
with that.
But you were nervous either way.
I was like, a little nervous.
Oh, God, what's going to come out of his mouth here?
He made it sort of classy. They're married, okay?
Yeah. So. And during the break, you're going to have to tell me about Zach Wilson and this Cougar thing. I had heard
people
it.
Will text in.
If you missed any of our conversation with Mark Schlereth, by God, you missed a whole bunch. So if you missed that or anything from the show, for that matter, you can find it on the podcast page after the show at seattlesports.com. And make sure you click subscribe. That's always the key to the whole thing. By the way, you were watching Ichiro do his thing out there. I love the one where he catches behind his back. Did you see that one?
I missed that.
Yeah, he's a freak. What is he, 50? He's like 50 years old or 49. And every ball he throws to the guy in center field is on a line. The guy doesn't move his feet. Watch when he throws the ball to the guy who's in center field. He doesn't even move his feet. It's a strike from the corner of right field. He's amazing. Anyway, all right. Our thanks to Mark Schlereth. Coming up, Jamal Adams is back. So what does that mean for this Seahawks defense? We'll get into that next. It's Wyman and Bob live from T-Mobile Park. You're listening to Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports.
We are live at T-Mobile Park. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710. And as we've seen a million times, Dave, see guys out there warming up, throwing a football. The guy that currently has a football in his hand right now, watch it. He threw one of the worst balls earlier. Now he threw a spiral. The last one was just brutal. I don't know who that
is. Who was it?
I don't know. I can't tell who it is, but I knew you had the binoculars. So.
It's not a player. I think it's a coach.
Yeah, it was ugly. But anyway, we were watching just the magic of Ichiro, who's still out there in the outfield throwing the ball around, making magical catches. It's always entertaining to see look at it. He's just throwing fastballs out there.
Yeah, he's still got an arm, man.
He's ridiculous.
The thing is pretty amazing what he does, what you've been describing, just the over-the-shoulder.
Turning his back to the ball. He's catching it behind his back. He really is just – watch this. Look at that. Just throwing strikes.
I want him to leave. I want him to leave the field so Bob will stop going, look at that. Look at that. Did you see that? Look at him.
He's 50.
Is he 50?
I think he's 49. Look it up. Right, yeah. Why speculate? Meanwhile, our thanks to Mark Schlereth, who joined us in the previous segment. Now, one bit of news that you and I have both been waiting for is Jamal Adams.
You were way off. He's 49.
I was way off. When does he turn 50? When's his birthday?
October 22nd.
So he's about to turn 50 in a couple of weeks.
Less than a month.
Look at him. And I would say right now he's probably one of the better defensive outfielders that could be on this team right now. I'd say that. Based on his...
At age 49.
Yes.
I don't know about that, Bob. I'm gonna disagree with you.
Okay.
Respectfully.
Okay.
Respectfully.
But meanwhile, back to Jamal Adams. Pete Carroll talking with Brock and Salk, making the declaration out there that he will, in fact, play this weekend.
Jamal is back.
He's playing this
week. Yeah, well, he's got to make it through the week, but he's ready to go, and he is so ready. He's as jacked up and excited a player as he is. We just got to keep him calm down, and I've already started talking to him about that so that he doesn't lose his brains because he's so fired up to play.
So he doesn't lose his brains.
Well, that was the first thing I thought, and I'm glad that Pete said that because at first I was like, you better calm him down because – I don't know that, like, his brain works faster than his body can hold, we've talked about. And, like, he has these ideas of, like, oh, I can make that play. I'm like, yeah, maybe you can't, you know, and be healthy and survive it. But, yeah, I can't wait to see him. I mean, I don't know that it's fair to expect what we saw his first year here. And then maybe,
probably not out of the gate.
Yeah, right. And you know, I feel like that was so monumental because – that was the pandemic year, right? When we got him 2020, I was able to go out. Like, they were only allowed like four or five different people to go out there at a time. So I got to go a couple of times, watch him in practice. I was like, man, number 33, if you didn't know that he was a big, you know, signing and trade and all that for first rounders, you would go, who's number 33, man? That guy looks really good. And then he just kept playing that same way the 2020 season up until he gets hurt, and then he plays in the playoff game and basically was playing with one arm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just it worries me about that part of it. But, man, if he, you know, and I think Pete's going to be back there like the mad scientist. Like, how can we use him? Can we do this? Can we have him do this? Can we?
Well, do you think they're going to baby step him? Like, all right, let's just a couple plays here, a couple
like reps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can't. I'll be surprised if he's just, all right, he's starting. He's playing the whole game as he normally would. I would think, all right, let's, like, they've got it mapped out. Let's give him, I don't know, 20 snaps.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing that out there. But something where they're just going to kind of build it up.
I think they can do that too, Bob. I think
he doesn't lose his brains, Dave.
Yeah. Well, and look, I mean, sometimes you have dime and there's six defensive backs on the field, but mostly it's five, and you've got so many guys to play that position. Even Jarek Reed, not just that position, but you know, these guys are multiple. I know you like that, Bob.
That's a great term, multiple.
The corners, I mean, you've got guys that can play everywhere. And Kobe Bryant was telling us how much he loves that about his game. He said, look, I've got, you know, I can play safety, I can play corner, I can play nickel. And really, it's the same Witherspoon, not a safety, but he can play nickel corner. So, yeah, you've got a bunch of moving parts there, and you can kind of work him in, and it wouldn't even be, like, noticeable. Right. I mean, it's not like you're putting him out there with training wheels, because there is lots of substitutions. Sometimes they put Devin Bush out there kind of almost playing like a nickel corner. So,
yeah.
I think that would be the case either way. But I think you're right. I think right up to the point where if they get to a point where they can put him out there and leave him out there all the time, that's somewhere in the future. And I don't think it's going to be game one here against New York.
Pete talking about, you know, he was asked whether they'd have Adams and Julian Love out there at the same time. Here's what he had to say.
Play him and Jamal together the whole time?
Oh, boy, if you start asking questions, I'll tell you what we're doing. No, just wait. We'll just wait.
Just wait.
All right, I guess that's a secret.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't imagine them standing side by side. I would assume, I feel like they want to get back to what he was, having him up in the box and having him more of a, I guess, kind of a linebacker role.
He was.
You know?
Yeah, he essentially was a linebacker.
Yeah. And it sounded like, you know, when they were talking about it before, even last year before he got hurt, that was kind of the idea. Because I think the play he got hurt, he was in the box. He came rushing off the edge, right? And he, you know, it was a bad injury. But, yeah, just the idea of, you know, him standing back there, you know, the traditional safety role just doesn't sound like that's the plan for him.
Yeah. I'm just writing down all the DBs that they have to choose from. I'm probably missing somebody. But, you know, you got Julian Love. You've got Jamal Adams. And those guys can play different spots, too. But, mm-hmm. you know, Kobe Bryant can play everywhere. Jarek Reed can play a couple of different. He can play nickel corner. Moyer told us how impressed he was with him. Witherspoon can play inside or outside. Mike Jackson and Reek Woolen are the two that are kind of like, they're pretty much just corners. Who am I missing?
Artie Burns.
Yeah, we'll talk to him tomorrow. So
Trey Brown.
Yep. And Trey, you know, we'll see. I don't know what's going to happen with the concussion. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, yeah, all those guys. And I'm not sure how versatile those two guys are either. They might be true corners. I see Artie playing inside, though, in the nickel spot. So, yeah, my point is that I think you can throw him out there and it wouldn't look weird or anything like, oh, we're only going to give them these reps or that reps. I mean, they can run just a normal rotation of what they're doing. Now, you hope at some point Jamal gets up to the point where he's Bobby Wagner. He's 100% of the snaps.
Yeah.
Which has happened, by the way, with Bobby. I was curious what was going to happen there. I don't see Jordan Brooks coming off a lot, but Bobby is playing every snap still. Like, that's a thing of, I should have asked him that the other day. Is that like a source of pride for you? Do you ask the coaches, could I need to be out there? Is it something that is, you know, fundamental to how you play and keeps you warm and all that stuff? I mean, it's pretty amazing for a guy in, what is it, his 13th year, 12th year?
It's 12, right?
Yeah.
Isn't it? I have to go back and look. But, yeah, it's impressive. Hopefully, what you see now is what you see at the end when the wear and tear is happening. If he's still going 100% of the snaps, what does he look like in game 13, 14, 15, right. and so on? So, but yeah, right now looks great. I can't wait to see Jamal out there. I just, he's a good dude. He's a great, I don't care what anybody says, he's a great football player.
Yeah,
he's just got to be able to stay healthy, and hopefully that'll be the case.
And I bet you we'll get at least two texts that say, oh, he sucks. He was a horrible trade.
Okay.
You're wrong, sir.
Coming up, your final chance to win Mariner tickets to Saturday's sold-out game is coming your way next. So stay tuned. It's Wyman and Bob on your home for Mariners the Mariners playoff hunt, Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports.
We are live at T-Mobile Park. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710. And right now it is your chance to win tickets to the Seattle Mariners to sold out Saturday night. How about that? Two tickets to Saturday's Mariner game. Caller number five at 866-979-3776 is going to be the winner. So call in 30 seconds if you're listening on the stream, 60 seconds if you're listening on the radio, and really make an attempt to get to know Matt Nelson when he answers the phone. He'll really appreciate that. But caller number five is going to be the winner for Saturday's tickets. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday all sold out. So there you go. Best of luck to everybody out there. Meanwhile, there was I don't know if you saw the highlight, Dave, but Mac Jones got into it with the defense in that Jets game. Jets players were frustrated, and he was running, and he became a running back essentially, and one guy kind of swung him and threw him to the turf, and everybody came running in, and he got up. And then Sauce Gardner, you see him shoving him back down to the ground. And you're like, what is going on here? So Sauce Gardner addressing the issue after the game.
After the play, you pushed Mac Jones over. He might have done something. Did he do something here that you below the belt?
Man, that's probably the first time that ever happened to me. So I got tackled, and he reached his hand up to try to, like, give me the help of work, and I just, like, moved his hand out the way. So then he get up. He just come up to me like, good job. But while he's saying that, he hit me in my private part. You know what I mean? So it's like I didn't react how I really wanted to, but that was just like the reaction that came after that. But I definitely wasn't expecting that. First time, it's the first time for everything, I guess.
Did you see the
private parts? Really?
Well.
Couldn't he have said he cup checked me?
I guess not. But he if you see the video, he posted a video. He says, I'm posting this so that I don't get fined. And I'm looking at the video and I'm rewatching it, going, I don't see what he's.
I didn't see it either.
I'm like, what are you posting here? How does this help you? Because I'm not saying it didn't happen, but his video doesn't show anything that's gonna help his defense.
I looked at it five times just now. I'm like, I don't see.
Yeah, I kept going, what am I missing here? Is this really obvious? And I'm going back. So I don't think he did himself any favors. I think if he was gonna get fined, he's still gonna get fined. That's how I see it. That video did absolutely nothing to prove his point there. I'm again not saying it didn't happen, but that video doesn't help.
No, I'm sorry. Did he get flagged on that play?
I believe he did. I believe he did.
Yeah, because he's saying he doesn't want to get fined, but. Because I think if it's a personal foul, then you get fined. It's not like holding or anything gets you fined.
Yeah.
So it's got to be something like that. But yeah, I don't. I've never. Didn't he? Wasn't there a rumor about him like last year or 2 years ago that he was? He did something. That was
apparently. Lefko put the note here that last year when he dove low at a Bengals player during an interception return.
Yeah.
So I guess he was accused of being dirty based on that play, and now Sauce is saying he hit me in the nether regions and
that's better. I like that.
And then so he shoved him back down to the ground. Maybe he is dirty. Maybe he's sneaky. Maybe he's got really quick sleight of hand skills, Dave, and that video just didn't, you couldn't see it because he's too good.
Well, he is a quarterback, so that's kind of interesting. That it's funny, I remember a lot of people going, wait, you don't wear a cup? But I only remember that happening twice. you know, and it's not a good feeling.
I can't imagine it is.
No, you get a stomachache very severely.
I think if I were running back, especially if you're just you're going into the pile every time.
Yeah.
And you're going to be on the bottom most of the time. You've talked about what I've heard those stories a million times about what happens in those piles and those scrums. Mm-hmm. How do you not wear one? I would be wearing a suit of armor.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of a code, though, that you don't do that at the bottom of the pile. Apparently, gouging somebody's eye out is not a code, because that happened to me. A guy named Derek Hoskins. And I, for a long time, I was like, if I ever run into that guy in an airport, I'm going to go punch him. But, yeah, he jabbed his finger into my eye, had a black eye and everything.
It's crazy.
But, yeah, that was the only time that anything like that. One time, it was in Denver in the first quarter, because when you play in Denver, the altitude hits you pretty hard, especially if you're on a long drive. And a guy came out, and I watched the film, and it was like he one hand to my shoulder, and then he like kind of with an uppercut
to the nether region.
To the nether region, yes. And that was terrible because I was out of breath and everything. But, yeah, it didn't really happen that much, which I think, you know, it is funny that sometimes people will go, oh, you really don't wear a cup? So,
yeah.
Speaking of that, last night for Cal, I mean, again, it seems like that guy, now I'm not watching other teams as closely, I guess, but that dude gets hit more than anybody, and it's always right in nether region, inner thigh.
Yeah, inner thighs, his hands. I mean, it feels like as of late, like maybe the last month, I've seen him like bend over at the waist, like foul ball or, you know, wild pitch, whatever, and you see him just go, like he's bending over and catching his breath, and the ump's over there sweeping off the plate, trying to give him time. And
yeah,
I feel like it's happened a lot more within the last month.
Yeah, and if you're an umpire behind the plate, you got to love Cal, right? I mean, he's just a nice, quiet guy. He's tough as hell. He just, you know, never, but you can see that he kind of closes his eyes like he's just sitting there waiting for the pain to pass. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and by the way, he's been a beast behind the plate.
Yes.
As of late. I think is it 23 that he's thrown? He's got an exorbitant amount of runners he's thrown out this year, and a lot of them have come recently. I mean, he's just laser down to second. Some nice plays by you know, whether it's JP or whether it's Rojas or Caballero, whoever's catching that throw down there. Some nice tag. We saw Rojas with a between the legs tag when he jumped up. So he's had help on the other side, but he's been really good at throwing out runners.
Well, and it's funny to me, too, that, I mean, you don't see him pumping a fist or anything. He just kind of turns around, and I always think of that quote you gave, you know, you were talking about where he's like, yeah, well, if they want to run, they can run.
They're allowed to.
I'm going to try to throw them out.
But they're allowed to if they want to. One other quick note. I saw this, and I thought this was a weird stat. 49ers are 3-0. And apparently this is historic in the sense that they are the first team, Dave, to rush and pass for at least 140 yards in 8 straight games. So they've had at least 140 passing yards, at least 140 rushing yards in 8 straight games.
That's weird. Also, they beat a team by scoring 30 points 3 weeks in a row. It's another weird stat that was up there. They've won their last 3 games, 30 to whatever.
That's weird that that's history, though.
It's just bad news all around, Bob. Yeah.
And you know who the quarterback for all those 8 games are?
Brock Purdy. Moyer's buddy.
He's not going to like that.
I think Paul might be getting tired of that because I think he just said certain things. But, yeah, if we want to keep him as a weekly guest, maybe
we should probably stop.
Lighten up on that a little bit.
I just feel like invariably, like any other quarterback, Purdy's going to have a dud. He's going to go out there. He's going to throw a couple picks. He's going to have a horrible day. They're going to lose. I feel like Paul's going to come calling.
Well, I don't think so.
I don't think so?
No, I think he just, you know, look, there is, and I'm part of it, there is a lot of hype because he was the very last.
Yeah, and the story's great.
The fact that the 49ers traded away so much to try to get, you know, with Trey Lance and then, what was it, 3 first-rounders and a third? I mean, all you had to do was wait till the last pick of the draft and get Brock Purdy, right?
Everybody knows that, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's just a good story. All right, the Mariners have a new threat to worry about in the division, and it should affect how they approach this offseason. We're going to get into that next as we continue live from T-Mobile Park. It's Wyman and Bob on the exclusive home of the Mariners playoff chase, Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.